What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
It's been 653 days since October 7th, 2023, and in that time, according to the Palestine Health Ministry's latest numbers, the Zionist-occupying state of Israel has murdered over 59,000 Palestinians, of which over half have been women and children. We know that that number is much higher, especially when thinking of the people that are literally lining what's left of hospital hallways, starving to death. A 35-day-old baby starved to death inside of a hospital last week. Here on Law and Disorder, we have spent the majority of the Mondays over the last 653 days bringing you Palestine Post, where we push back on the mainstream media's misinformation and disinformation in its attempt to justify a genocide in order to maintain the bloody status quo. We start today's Palestine Post with headlines analysis with Yaffa A.S., Executive Director of the Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity, a trans-Muslim and displaced indigenous Palestinian. Good morning, Yaffa.
Good morning.
Oh my gosh, it's been so long. I was so excited. My producer, our new producer, Teresa Wierzbianska, was doing research, you know, and going over old old interviews and found you and was like, this human is wonderful. I said, yes, they are. And here you are.
I appreciate that.
We're really excited.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to be back.
I mean, I wish it was under, you know, I wish you were talking. I mean, I never talk about anything happy on the show, really, but I really wish. It was not a conversation that we started in January of 2024. I looked it up, Yaffa. That's the last time we spoke, which means, oh my, that just like made me choke up a little bit. We were only 3 months into this iteration of the genocide, and it was already awful, right? We are now almost 2 years in. Things are worse than they've ever been, which feels like weird to say, right? But we are talking about, like, literally Israel is murdering upwards of 100 or more of people every day.
Yeah.
Every day I wake up and there's that headline, right? And today, as I mentioned in the intro, the Palestinian Health Authority says over 59,000 Palestinians have been killed, but we know way higher. Two-part question. One, your reaction to what I just said, right? We last went to January 2024, the number of people murdered, the ongoing atrocities in your homeland. And then two, if you could segue into, you know, when we talked a year and a half ago, almost, could you have imagined that this is where we'd be?
Yeah, those are great questions. I think the first question in terms of where we're at right now, I think what really comes to mind as an organizer, as a culture worker, as someone who trains individuals globally around how do we do work that's going to move us towards collective liberation, I really think about how it's beyond time for us to be changing our tactics, really changing how we're moving in the world. And I think that's a difficult lesson for a lot of people who, and this kind of moves us into that second question, where I think a lot of people were expecting this to be over really quickly, right? Or at least become invisible a lot quicker than it has. And a lot of us knew that that wasn't going to be the case, unfortunately. Like, I was recently reading my first poetry collection after October 7th, which was released November 14th, 2023, called Blood Orange. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within that, I talk about hundreds of thousands of lives lost. And, I think about thinking that literally less than a week into the genocide. And again, how so many of us knew that this wasn't going to be over really quickly, that unfortunately, the worst that we could ever imagine was going to happen. And now, almost 2 years later, it has happened and continues to happen every single day. And so I think we're kind of at a place where I would love to invite people to really reflect on that, of like, what have we been doing and what do we need to do moving forward, recognizing that? Because the way that we move in the world, organizing wise specifically, or trying to move towards liberation, if we're assuming that things are going to be over on their own, because the systems are going to wake up and they're going to realize that they have to do better and that mass genocide is a problem, then we're organizing in a specific way. But when we're at where we are now, when we actually realize that, like, this isn't something that systemic oppression wants to end, this isn't something that will just go away on its own, then how do we move in that world? And I really want to invite people to really reflect on that. But I always think of everything as a call to action. And I think of that for my people, with all the queer and trans people that I work with in Gaza that have been killed, some of whom are still alive. I think about that for my extended family who are in Gaza, a lot of whom have been killed, some of whom are still alive. Of that, you know, they don't want us just thinking of these headlines and being immobilized by it. They want us to do something, right? They are asking for us to show up today differently than we did yesterday, because what we did yesterday didn't work. And the next day, they want us showing up even more differently because it still didn't work until it does work. And that's kind of where I'm at in terms of really like what's currently going on and then what's been happening over the last year and a half. And again, unfortunately for some of us, we expected it to get this bad. We expect it to continue getting bad. And I work every day to try to build a world where our response is a little bit different every day, so that hopefully one day we do get to that liberated world.
There's so much I love about the answer that you just gave, Yaffa. Mostly, very selfishly, the ways in which it's just challenged me as an organizer. And I had this aha. I mean, you know me. I just like whether it's going to get me in trouble or not. It usually comes out of my mouth, or whether it's going to, and if it's going to expose me, it's definitely going to come out of my mouth. And you know, a good organizer critiques self-critique. So last week I had Sim Kern on, who has a new book out called Genocide Bad, that I believe we played on the air last week. And they said the same thing, that because in their book it says that they knew, because when Hamas did what it did on October 7th, Sim was like, I know, because I've been, you know, an activist in this arena for so long, that anytime Palestinians have the audacity to assert their humanity and fight back, that Israel, you know, comes back tenfold. And so I just sat with that and let them sort of talk about that. But then when you were just talking, I was like, well, Kat, what did you think was going to happen? And so two things. A, I don't know that I ever actually answered that question. Yeah. And then and that's despite being what I believe has been an accomplice, right, to the Free Palestine movement, like as long as I've been running my mouth as an organizer, but ever since APTP was founded. But then two, I was like, okay, so what would it, this is the critique, self-critique. And how is it informed by being a Black person in this country? And I think that what I thought was, if I'm being completely 100 with it, is that things would go back to status quo hell. Right? Like it does, it does here, right? Like 2020, everybody's in the streets, right? The cops stop killing us for a second, and then we all just go back to the cops killing us 3 people a day, right? And you know, everything's fine. Wow, my head. So thank you. My head's exploding. But I love those moments. And I love that I'm, you know, despite how many years I have doing this work, that I can still learn. So that then leads me to, because the tagline of this show is expose, agitate, and build. Yeah. And you jumped right into the build part. And I talked a little bit about this with Curry Peterson Smith, but we never really got into specifics. And I agree. But I'm wondering what you feel comfortable anyway talking about on the airwaves. How do our organizing tactics need to change?
There's definitely a lot that I'm comfortable sharing on the air, and then a lot that I'm not comfortable sharing in the air, mostly specifically because of how strategy works.
Yep.
Right. I find, you know, so much of my work is just finding the most strategic ways of moving in every single space. And so even when I'm able to share different things, if it's just going to overwhelm everyone, it's not actually moving us forward, then I'm like, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
And sometimes it is a safety thing, right? And sometimes it's underground organizing. The main thing that I would say right now that I see as like one of the biggest gaps that exists within our communities is that our communities are really not trained to do this. I think different community members have different training. There's a lot of people who have been in these movements for a really long time. And, you know, when I talk about this, I'm never just talking about Palestine, because I don't think a free Palestine can exist without a indigenously sovereign Turtle Island, right? And without like Black folks being free in every single way. I just can't imagine that as a reality. And so I'm always talking about it all together. And I find that In so many spaces, there are a lot of people who want to be doing the work but have never been trained. And part of the work that I do in terms of training up folks, and even in just like book talks and things like that, I'll always share of how the messaging from systemic oppression has taught us that if you are, quote, a good person, then you know how to organize, you know how to mobilize, you know how to world build. But I find that ridiculous, right? Because if today on a Monday, I go and I'm like, tomorrow I want to be a surgeon, people will laugh at me. People know that's ridiculous. We know that to be a surgeon, you have to go through very specific training, whether through the medical industrial complex or completely rooted in community. But you don't just within a moment's notice move into a completely new specialty. We understand that these are specialties. These are technical skill sets. And I find that when it comes to world building, when it comes to organizing, when it comes to mobilizing people, we assume that anybody can just do this and everyone's going to understand strategy and everyone here is for the exact same thing. And I find that actually the vast majority of us are really not. Like, even thinking of, you know, for me, I'm always here for building a collectively liberated world. But in the end of the day, unless we define that in every single space I am in, it means nothing, because we assume that we're all here for it. But then you work with someone, you're like, actually, wait, you're kind of transphobic, right? Or you're anti-Black or whatever it is. And your vision of collective liberation actually doesn't include everyone. And I find that one of the ways to move past that is really in intense skill building and doing intensives and getting people the training that they need. And within that, some of the political education to be able to have the right frameworks. And it's less about being able to name things. Like, sometimes we go more into the theory than the work itself.
Come on.
Not that either, right? Like, I'm here for just the work, right? But I'm also here for, like, let's really teach people how to move strategically, how to do this long-term, how to actually do that work. But right now, I see a lot of fracturing within a lot of our movements and a lot of lack of those skill sets. And it's almost shameful to say that, like, you know what, I need to grow in this area to be able to fully show up and to have access to spaces. And we know that's by design, right? A lot of our institutions that we're teaching organizing have been targeted and have been shut down over the years, which is why I do the work that I do in terms of training people. But I find so many of the challenges that are currently preventing us from actually doing this work are things that with proper training, we can actually move past. And I say this with spaces that I go and train where, you know, the vast majority of spaces I have trained, and I've done over 150 events since the start of October 7th. And I used to do way more intensives prior to that, right? And so I've trained communities around the world. I've done thousands of hours of trainings with people in places and have seen the difference that happens. But, you know, when I go into spaces, I find that 99% of them, if a single conflict happens, the entire space falls apart. And I'm really transparent with places and really charismatic, and so I get away with it. But I will go to places and be like, we're not on the same page. We're not on the same level. If a single conflict can tear apart everything that you are doing while I'm out here building, let's say, safe houses around the world or something. I'm not saying I am or I'm not, whatever. But we're not on the same page, right? Like, I'm here for communities that have made conflict irrelevant. And that's what I train people to do, right? Where conflict is something really beautiful and we can move through it. But when it takes away the entirety of the work, right? When we lose sight of that, actually, we are talking about a genocide. We're talking about a mass starvation campaign as we speak. And we want to sit here and pretend as if, like, my relationship with anybody in the world is more important than the work. I love relationships. I love the people I work with. I love the communities I work with. I love everyone. I'm so here for it. But I will never be in a place where I believe that I am more important than any part of this work. And we can do it at the same time, right? But so much of that is skill building. And so for me, it's less of like, what is the one thing that we do? Because I find that we're not in a place where we have a solid enough foundation to be effective in almost any of the things that we're doing. I think we're doing a lot, but I think there's so much waste everywhere that we look, where even the most brilliant of actions, the most brilliant of campaigns, they're not getting to where they need to go because of that lack of infrastructure, because they exist almost in their own silos. And for me, I'm like, Let's talk about the technical elements of that. Let's really understand what it means to build a healthy foundation. And that's really a lot of my writing, a lot of my work, and it is to actually build out the technical pieces of that. And that was something I realized actually almost exactly a year ago, where I was leading, I was in Norway, in Oslo, and I was going to do a world building, like a building utopia workshop. And I realized as I was like sitting there having conversations with the community about what needs to be in it and so on and so forth, I realized that I have never done a technical like strategy session in terms of like, what is strategy? What does that actually mean? And I've been doing this work for a really long time, for about 15 years, throughout my entire adulthood. And even before, I left home when I was 16. The Syrian revolution started right after, as I was in southern Syria. So I became an organizer on the streets as an actual war is happening. And that entire time I've been training people and talking about this. And even I had never done a session about like, let's talk about the technical elements versus just the what do we do? Like, what is strategic in this moment in time? And I find that when we train people in those skill sets, then they are able to do this work for far longer and are able to identify the strategy on their own and building with other people instead of somebody somewhere always having to tell people what to do. And I think we have huge gaps with that. And so for me, what I've been doing is really like supporting communities and in moving towards that and just recognizing of like, it's okay that we don't know everything and we can get trained to be able to know more so that we're able to get to levels where we are becoming more effective and more efficient. And that takes commitment from communities, that takes shared responsibility for collective liberation, that takes investment. And I will say, like I mentioned, prior to October 7th, I was probably doing 40 hours of training at least a month around the world in different places. Prior to COVID, it was maybe 80 hours. I haven't done a single full intensive since October 7th because most of our communities are too overwhelmed to be adequately trained to really move through this together. And so in the fall, I'm starting to just do intensives. But again, to be honest with you, of like in almost these last 2 years, I haven't done more than 4 hours of training at a time. And that to me is representative of the problem and tells me a lot about where we are as a movement and like different interconnected movements, because I also don't think a single movement is going to be the thing that moves us there. And so that's kind of where I'm at, of like the immediate need as we're trying to figure out other things. Because for me, without that foundation, we're just moving in different directions and seeing what works and what doesn't, but we're not being strategic. And we're a community that's heavily targeted in a multitude of ways, and particularly the communities I represent, which are disabled, queer, trans, obviously Palestinian, and everyone I work with, we're experiencing a lot of state violence, a lot of violence from within communities, all kinds of things. And, you know, to me, when we're just throwing things on a board and trying to see what works, we're never actually eliminating fascism. We're never eliminating genocide. We're just detouring it. We're just holding it off a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm here for full collective liberation. Like, I want all of our people free. That's what I build towards. And so I want us to be really strategic. I want us to recognize that we don't have a lot of resources, but to me, a single one of us who understands all of this, right, the light that they bring to the table is so much greater than anything systemic oppression can do to us. Like, what are they going to do? Kill us? Please. Most of us have, they've been trying to kill us our entire lives. And yet here we are, and a single one of us is so much greater than that. And so I think about, what does it look like when hundreds of us, thousands of us, tens of thousands are fully trained, are empowered in those ways to fully reclaim all of our communities and build that collectively liberated world? To me, I'm like, they can try to pretend as if they are infinite and that they will always be here and that we are powerless. But from where I sit, I'm like, girl, I recognize power when I recognize it. And that's us. That's what we do. And I want more people really understanding that and knowing how to mobilize that.
Well, take us to church on Monday morning. Yeah, fine. I don't know if folks listen to me regularly. Like, yes, yes, yes. I talk a lot about, not, I don't think nearly as eloquently as you just put it, but about, I'm like, where are the organizers? Like the real, oh, that's right. We haven't been producing them. Where is the infrastructure? Oh, that's right. We, you know, celebritized and monetized our movement. So, you know, nobody's accountable to anybody. Where is the, you know, I mean, like, so I think you're right. I think it is our Achilles heel. I think the ways in which we've allowed our movement to be co-opted, infiltrated, dumbed down, watered down in this idea, this individualism, me, and I can do whatever I want, say whatever I want, and I'm not accountable to anybody. I think, you know, the loss of collectivity. I mean, I think we talk about collectivity, but it just doesn't exist. And all you need to do is take one pass on Instagram. and to look at the state of it, right? Like, because I log on, I'm like, oh. Well, that's what we're focused on. Okay. Well, I thought there was a fascist in the office, but right on, you know, this is way more important. Like this person, whatever. So I'm so glad. And as usual, when I talk to you, there's not enough time, but I'm not going to let you go just yet. So I'm gonna be late for my next guest because I don't want to let you go without really talking about the populations that you represent, right? And you mentioned it, and it's there in your response, the queer, trans, disabled Palestinians on the ground right now in the middle of this genocide. We talked a little, you know, we talked about it when I talked to you in January of last year, the specific ways in which those populations are targeted by the ITF and are suffering during this genocide.
Yeah.
That's my question.
Yes. Okay. I love that. Sorry, I got so lost in your words. I was like, I can also listen to you talk all day. I was like, yes. Let's just keep talking. I wish that, like, you know, it's interesting because in my head we talked like 6 months ago, and so it's interesting to think that this was January 2024.
Yeah.
And thinking about how a year and a half has passed since then, and I really wish that I could come on here and tell you that things are different in any way, shape, or form, or that it's a population that is gaining more support. But instead, unfortunately, it's less visibility, less support. And I think this says so much about the world that we're trying to build and the state of our movements, of that the most marginalized of the most marginalized within the context of this particular genocide and all the other genocides, the fact that within almost 2 years, we are still not talking about who are the most marginalized of the most marginalized in Gaza, as we recognize that this genocide is impacting everyone, obviously, but within every single community, there's always going to be more marginalized of more marginalized individuals. And I think that's just a practice that I would want to invite people into within their own communities, because we're not just talking about a genocide on the other side of the planet. We are also talking about communities, wherever people are, where they're listening, of that there is a most marginalized of a most marginalized, and there are more marginalized people than our listeners. And there's always somebody more marginalized that nobody has access to, including someone like me, who does work with the most marginalized of the most marginalized. And so, unfortunately, you know, last year, there was a lot of interest in a lot of places to talk a little bit more about pinkwashing and how the IDF is targeting individuals and the state of queer and trans Palestinians on the ground. It was very minor, but there was a little bit more, in my opinion. Now, it's almost as if, you know, 2 years later, most places are still shocked that queer and trans Palestinians even exist. Right, that they are on the ground in Gaza and they have been killed, and dozens of them that I'm aware of, and then so much more that I am not aware of, and where our stories do not get shared, our names will not be on the list, especially if it's a trans Palestinian. And again, I really want to invite people to really reflect on that, of how is that representative of what we're trying to build. You know, if we're saying that, or maybe I'm just saying it, if we're saying that we're trying to build a collectively liberated world, but at the same time are not conscious of who are the people who are the most impacted by the things around us, then are we really trying to build a collectively liberated world, or are we trying to build a closer to liberation, more privileged world for ourselves? And I find that without having that conversation, then again, we're just building in different directions and pretending as if we're all trying to eliminate all of fascism versus just making parts of fascism invisible where it doesn't actually harm us. And this isn't saying of like, I can't work with someone who doesn't fully believe in collective liberation, but if I don't know that, then I can't be as strategic as I can be. So again, unfortunately, of like the, you know, everything that you're hearing about Palestine, about Gaza right now, around the famine, around the mass starvation is impacting the queer and trans population, but even more so than other populations, because like we talked about last time, queer and trans individuals in general, when crisis happens, are not the primary receivers of aid and support or even empathy and compassion from individuals. Usually we focus on families. And if you think of being a queer person, you're not going to have a family. If you're a trans person, you're not going to have children that then individuals want to try to save. And so going through the same things, but just with less resources. And unfortunately, over a year and a half into this, close to 2 years, there are still very, very few places or people who are dedicated to queer and trans Palestinian liberation in Gaza. And it's not to say if like, you know, nothing is happening. My work is continuing. There have been support from certain communities. Different communities have stepped in along the way. As I have gone into communities, a lot of places have been willing to have conversations. But I think, again, it does tell me a lot of the challenges that exist within our movements, where most communities don't feel empowered to be talking about specific sectors of a community that is being marginalized and want to pretend as if all marginalization impacts us the same, but it never does. And a lot of that is identity politics. A lot of that is, in particular, identity politics that we place on individuals that are most marginalized. I don't know. I don't remember if I mentioned this a year and a half ago, but the same problem is still happening where, you know, there are a lot of pro-Palestinian spaces that that are not welcoming to me specifically as a very visible trans Palestinian. One of the very few that are actively talking about the genocide and actively doing this work. But the individuals that are preventing me from accessing those spaces are never Palestinians. They're usually allies who perceive that Palestinians within that space are not going to accept someone like me. And so then you have the multitudes of identity politics of someone who's not of my community, assuming that they know my community better than I know my community, and trying to erase my existence in the process. And so that's still ongoing. And I find as we go deeper and deeper into things, as it becomes more and more normal, these things become larger and larger problems within our movement spaces, which again, then we need the conversations. We need the skill building for people to really know how to move through these things versus just having our spaces fall apart. There's always immense sadness when I witness a space just deteriorating, or I call it like self-cannibalizing whenever a space falls apart due to conflict. And I'm like, but it doesn't have to be that way. But so few people and places recognize that. So few of us have actually witnessed moving through conflict in really beautiful and healthy ways. So many people have never witnessed that, have never seen what it means to really prioritize the work over our egos, and have never been trained in that. And, you know, I was doing an event recently on Lenape Hokeng, and I mentioned that, you know, from my experience, very little has been resolved. And one of my loved ones was in the space and reminded me of a conflict that they were a part of. And so I used that as an example where I was like, okay, that's actually a wonderful example because it was a conflict between two individuals. And then I was kind of in the middle of that, but both of the individuals put the work first. And so we were able to resolve it fully, but The resolution was kind of an additional thing of let's have a longer term relationship versus that the work is ever going to be harmed. That was never on the table. And so the difference in moving through things when that's the case versus you did something and so I will never come back on your radio show versus actually like, great, we could disagree on things. That's human. That's part of it. But if we recognize that the work comes first.
Right.
Then we can actually do that work.
Yeah, I do all sorts of things that make people angry. Yeah, I've got to wrap us
I
up
love that.
To get to the. Listen, I'm a human being. Yes. And some of that I stand by, you know, despite yeah. you know whatever popular Instagram opinion is, and it's always rooted in political principle. But I have to painfully yes. Say goodbye to you for now.
Till next time.
Again soon. Yeah, till next time, and it won't be a year and a half. Yeah, but thank yes. you so much for joining us this morning.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.